to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
People want to make it work. They want to make it work together. And I will protect their rights and the rights of everybody.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show.
What the city should be doing are those things that are absolutely critical where we can do it better than the private side.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
And good morning, everybody. Yes, Bill Rock, thank you very much. It is a Friday. That does indeed mean that Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here in Studio 4 at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning. A lot warmer than it's been.
Yes,
came down on the subway, and most people were not... Well, more people were not wearing coats than were.
We got away easy with the big wind yesterday. Some places around us. You know.
Yeah, I mean, it made fighting that terrible fire in Queens a lot harder. And for the firefighters, thank God nobody was hurt. And I don't know whether the winds had anything to do with that terrible airplane crash up in Buffalo from a commuter flight from Newark to Buffalo. I tried to call the mayor of Buffalo before I came over here. I'll get to him when I get back.
Yeah, a bad situation, but something I mentioned earlier this morning, first fatal plane crash in the United States since August of 2006.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to remember when I heard it this morning on the radio when I woke up. I think that is right. We've gone a few years without, and I remember thinking that when the U.S. airplane went into the Hudson, you know, we maintained our record of no fatal commercial crashes in the country for a while.
Yeah, I saw you handing out keys to the city. How many keys to the city do you have up in City Hall? I mean,
a state secret or a city secret.
A city secret.
Suffice it to say that we have as many as we need. That's correct. I wonder who pays for those. Probably the city. The crystal apples that we give away, those are donated by Tiffany's. We don't waste the public's money. The keys probably don't cost very much. And I do remember the ceremonial pens that we give away
when you sign bills.
These are fancier than the ones we had before, and it turns out they're cheaper.
You don't use just a Bic pen. I mean, some 20 cent.
You can use 10 pens. After that, it's kind of hard to write your name and date. And then you mix them in with others. So it's like in a firing squad where one guy supposedly has blanks and nobody will ever know.
And some of the bills you've signed with those, I probably thought of the same way.
Well, that may
like
be.
Like a firing squad.
A circular one.
Yes, indeed. All right. Speaking of trips and dollars and cents, you were down in Washington doing some lobbying with Randy Weingarten?
Randy couldn't go. Her mother died.
Oh, okay.
I went yesterday to the mother's funeral, which is why I couldn't go to hear Chris Quinn. I spent the day before yesterday, Wednesday, in Washington, and hopefully influenced the dialogue, as they say, which means trying to get more money for New York City. There's still some of the details we don't know. So if you say to me, how much are we really going to get and what can it be used for? Everybody has these positions and says things, but until you see the actual law and the language that's drafted, whether they did it deliberately or did it by accident, there could be one word that makes it better, makes it worse. We'll see. Clearly, the stimulus package will provide some funds for Albany and some funds for the city. We're reasonably sure there's money in there for Medicaid relief. Our Medicaid bill for the city is about $5 billion a year, and I think we'll get about $1 billion both this year and next year, and that just reduces your costs. The education money, I'm not sure yet, but I'm very hopeful that we will get enough money to offset the governor's $770 million cut in education. Depends on how that comes in. There's a variety of different ways. They'll be yelling and screaming. If it goes through Albany, Albany tends to want to spread it around the state based on population. If it comes directly, it would come in what's called Title I funds, which goes to the school systems that have the most kids with special ed and English language learning problem, non-English speaking kids. And then there's different kinds of money. There's money for construction and this and that. With the federal government or state or city government, nothing is simple.
Who do you go talk to? I mean, who do you go lobby to? You didn't go to the president, I don't think.
No, I didn't, but I spent time with Senator Schumer, who is a very powerful senator and really understands New York City and has been a great advocate for us. You can't ask for more. Charlie Rangel, same thing on the House side, can't have a better advocate. I went to see Sue Collins, and Joe Lieberman. They were two of the senators who had a lot of say, because everybody in the Senate, the issue is, you if they have 60 Democrats, you have to have more than 60, I guess it is, to prevent a filibuster. Otherwise,
you
minority
need 61,
party,
otherwise.
Right, that's the way the minority party has some say. In this case, the minority happens to be Republican. In the past, it had been Democratic, but. They both are, you know, people that I've gotten to know over the years and worked hard with and built relationships with. And you want to have people like that who are influential, who you can go and make your case to. Doesn't mean they agree with you and do what you ask all the time, but at least you get the access. And New York City has a lobbying office in Washington run by a guy named Bill Daley, who's done a very good job. And we have a lobbying office up in Albany and here. And, you know, there's so much money involved. You're talking about billions of dollars. You don't just, you know, say, hey, give us some. You have to work. You work with the staffs for the senators and congressmen, try to get the legislation written the way it's favorable to us. And, you know, we'll get some. It's a whole separate thing as to whether or not, you know, it's the stimulus package is going to help the country, or whether it's going to, it's a good idea, or mortgages our children's future. I mean, we all have different ideas on that, and only history will show, really, whether or not, and even then, you're not going to be sure. There'll be economists arguing.
There's all kinds of different things pulling at.
Right, but what I was there Wednesday was not to try to express my views on at that level. It was to try to get the money for New York City.
My question about the stimulus package, I talked with Ray Kelly, New York City Police Commissioner, earlier this week, and we were talking about the COPS program, which is being revived with the stimulus package. There will be some money, probably, for police officers, and the same thing applies here, that when you take this money, that whatever amount it ultimately happens to be, and you plop it down here, and it does help with education and the other things that it will be earmarked for, what happens down the road when that money goes away, and you're stuck with
a minor generally the answer is, I'll worry about that after the next election, or I'm not going to be in office, or, you know, it's so far down the road, we'll have inflation and you'll pay back these debts with cheaper dollars. That's one of the problems in getting people to think long term. A better example is, why put money into a water tunnel today that you're going to cut the ribbon 10 years down the road? Actually, our new water tunnel be around in a couple of years, you'll be able to cut the ribbon. But, you know, making long-term investments when you have a short-term election cycle. And I've always thought the Senate election cycle, you're there for 6 years. So it's easier to make tough decisions. In the House, it's every 2 years. And so, you know, the instant one election's done, they start raising money for the next election, and they're worried about taking unpopular positions and that sort of thing.
Do you believe, as I think a lot of people do, that the system creates problems in and of itself from a decision-making standpoint?
Well, you know, it's like Winston Churchill said, democracy is not very good, except it's better than all of the systems. And, you know, you come up with something that's better. I mean, I've always thought, you know, whether it's at the governor's level or the president's level, you elect the governor, you elect the president, but they pick the lieutenant governor or vice president. That's not very democratic. Having said that, if you go back in history, it used to be in the United States, I think the candidate that lost for president became, and it was very dysfunctional there as well.
Sure.
So, you know, there is no easy answer to some of these things. If you had separate elections, separate campaigns, you know, you don't need a vice president or a lieutenant governor that's always fighting you. But, you know, that I think actually that would be a better thing than what we have today, where the presidential or gubernatorial candidates pick whoever they like. Now, whether they pick them on, you know, merit or politics or whatever, but they just pick them. It's not a general thing.
I understand you also spent some time with the new senator from New York.
I did. I went over to I actually met her in the morning. She came to the Charlie Rangel had the Democratic House delegation, and she came. She had been a representative, as you know, in the House, and so she came. That's the first time I had shaken her hand, and then I went to see her in the afternoon, and you know, we went out and talked to the press, and the answer was, look, she And she has voted on some things in ways I didn't think were the right things for this state or this country. But, you know, we had a long, frank talk, and I tried to explain to her why guns were so bad. And, you know, her whole perspective had been from upstate. You don't have the concentration of people in a central city. Hunting is much more of a sport. And I don't have any problems with people bearing arms or hunting. But guns in the hands of criminals and children in the streets of our city is not smart. And I actually walked away with a reasonably good feeling. I brought up one of our people that works on the Mayor's Coalition Against Guns. We're up to 350 mayors across the country, probably represent 60 or 70 million people. And that person is now starting to work with her staffer. And I'm optimistic that she will... you know, that she'll give us the opportunity to explain our positions and that we will convince her.
I'm sure you didn't care for the decision in South Carolina to voting on people walking around with guns carrying in holsters.
You know,
I thought of you when I read that.
Well, the governor of Virginia, I've been meaning to call him. He deserves a lot of credit. Virginia Tech, after that, you know, that was terrible. And he this time really did try to get the state Senate to pass some more stringent gun laws, and he missed by a couple of votes, but at least he was trying. And, you know, there's the gun show loophole where you have background checks, but not if you sell at a gun show. There's if you lose your license, you're no longer a dealer and you don't have background checks. It's like having a drug dealer. You convict them, they can go out on the street and get rid of their crack by selling it to kids. And you don't have background checks for people that work in gun shops. You don't have the sharing of information, which the cops need. That's that old Tehart Amendment issue, which will come back up. The president sounds like he's on the right side of the issue. Devil's in the details. You know, single issue advocacy. Advocacy groups like the NRA take no prisoners, and there's never any compromise. I think there is, and if you do the polling, even NRA members and gun owners, same percentage as non-NRA members and non-gun owners, 85, something like that percentage of the people, which is virtually 100% in the polling world, say reasonable gun regulations are appropriate. I mean, you can go on the web and they advertise a 50 caliber rifle that'll bring down will bring down an airliner at a mile and a half.
Please. Why am I laughing? I shouldn't be. Hang on, Mr. Mayor. We've got lots of questions and then conversation, and we'll get questions from you, I hope, at 800. We always do. 800-321-0710. If you've got a question or comment for the mayor, 800-321-0710. We're coming right back. Got a question for the mayor, 800-321-0710. Talk to Figs, see if he'll get you up there on the board. We'll get to that in just a little while. Mr. Mayor, talked with Christine Quinn, Speaker of the City Council, earlier this morning.
Right.
She had the State of the City yesterday. Talked about the quote-unquote millionaire's tax. Albany's talking about it. Good idea? Bad idea?
Well, no taxes are good ideas. Unfortunately, if you want services, the people that deliver them want to get paid, surprise, surprise, and so we have to have them. The danger is when you start to... The first rule of taxation should be you don't try to tax people who can move. And the group that's the most... 1% of the people that live in the city, the households that file in the city, pay something like 50% of the taxes.
I think that's a general national number, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, in a city, that's about 40,000 people. So if, you know, a handful left, they would make it, you could, any raise would make it revenue neutral. I mean, I'm sympathetic with Albany in that they've got to raise taxes and get money. The first thing they should do is cut. We've cut $3 billion out of our budget. I haven't seen them cut anything, really. In terms of tax policy, you know, I'll take a look at Christine Quinn's proposals. I think in the end what Albany is likely to do is unfortunately raise the taxes so much on some of the people that there is a point at which you're going to start losing them.
Because it's, as you say, it's easy for them to move. They can do their business other places.
You know, the question is what's fair? If 1% are paying 50% of the taxes, you want to make it even more, what is a fair? Anybody below that 1%, no taxes? Keep in mind, half the households who file tax returns don't pay any taxes. And about 30% of the households that file get a credit from the government. The government sends them a check. That's earned income tax credit. It's also true that it's easy to rile against the quote rich, but I saw, you know, one group wants to give affordable housing up to people up to $240,000 income a year, but $250,000 they're millionaires and we got to tax them. I mean, we just at some point.
I saw that figure. It had to do with rent stabilization. That to 240, you could qualify for rent stabilized. 250, you become a millionaire.
Right. You know, it's the trouble is it's easy to pick a group that doesn't have a lot of votes. It is also true. These are the people that elected officials go to for money when they want to raise money. And I've always thought to myself, you know, how do you do that? Now, Chris Quinn, number one, I think you can say the same thing about her that you can say about the governor. I respect both of them for trying to do something, propose things. In the legislature, a lot of people just talk.
Which is easy.
Yeah. I mean, she's got actual proposals, some of which we'll agree with, some of which we won't. We'll work together on all of the different things and how it comes out. We don't have to make those kinds of decisions for the city for another few months. March, April, May, June. So we've got 4.5 months left to go. In the next few days, we'll know what the federal government did to us or for us, depending on how you want to phrase it. And then the Albany legislature and the governor of the state have to come up with their budget before April 1 is what the law requires. So we'll know all of that. We'll also have more information about what's happening in our economy. It would appear that the retail sector is continuing to collapse, is a nice way to phrase it.
Even though sales were up 1%, or at least
you go in the stores and there's nobody there. And you know, if you sell stuff at 75% off, I mean, they're just raising cash because they'd rather have a little bit of cash than expensive inventory, but they're not going to stay in business doing that. Restaurants this week, you know, I eat out virtually every night. Try to eat in different boroughs each time. I don't get around. Obviously, you do more in Manhattan. But last night was the first restaurant this week that was full, and they didn't fill the tables more than once. I noticed I was there with two old friends and, you know, the six of us around the table. And we got there a little bit late, and we had a good time and stayed a little bit late, so you had a chance to see. And when the people left, nobody rushed in to fill those tables. And the other restaurants during the week were half full.
Mm. No, it's a tough situation. Or let me ask you this, how optimistic are you that we're going to see something middle of the year, June-ish, than any indication that we're moving to a
No indication
place?
That the crisis of confidence, which is what gets the public to not spend, no evidence whatsoever that is slowing down, and nobody knows. You know, if I had to guess, pick a number, a year, it's a 2 years, I don't know. It's not months. And it's easy to say, well, we'll fix it with money. And that's what Congress always does. Because remember, what Congress fundamentally does is they vote money. They tax and they redistribute wealth.
They really have no other option.
Well, they can change some regulations. But fundamentally, you're right. And there was a study done recently of where they gave mortgage help. And I forget the numbers, but a big percentage of the people who could afford the mortgages after they were restructured still walked away from them because the mortgage was for greater than what the house was worth, which shows you how difficult this problem is. People, you can't raise real estate prices, so are they just going to keep defaulting no matter what? And then the argument is, should you even help or just let them default? That's what they're going to do. Why spend taxpayer money that doesn't seem to do any good? But having said that, you know, I've always thought Geithner and Summers are smart guys. And they don't need second-guessing any more than anybody else does, particularly now they've come in, they've got a job to do. You want to second-guess them? Wait a year, and then, you know, that's fair enough. Nothing wrong with criticism. But at the beginning, I think you got to support what they think is right. And we've got to help it's not popular to say so, but until the banking system gets strong and starts lending again, you will never get out of this. I don't care how much you want to hate bankers and that sort of thing. That's just the real world. The second real world is we don't live in this world by ourselves. We cannot have regulations. regulation and monetary and fiscal policies devoid of what's going on overseas. We desperately need more free trade, not less. The xenophobia and closing down markets. It was a disaster back in the 30s in the Smoot-Hawley bill. It would be a disaster now. Our country is, we import an enormous amount. We also export an enormous amount. And the future of the country is to be an exporting country. We want to export high-value products and import low-value products because that's the ways you have jobs that have benefits and decent wages and that sort of thing, the kind of jobs we want here. You know, if your whole strategy is to be the low-cost producer, we're a loser. There's no, even in, you go to China, in eastern China, the more business-oriented, the factories are closing. The whole bunch of people went home for holidays, no jobs when they came back.
Hundreds of thousands.
Right. And so the business is moving from there to western China, where labor is a lot cheaper, moving to Bangladesh and
Laos,
Sri Lanka and Laos and Vietnam. You can't survive if your business strategy is be the low-cost producer. You got to be the high value-added producer. And particularly in America, where we want everybody to have good jobs, not just a job. And that's the same thing comes with tax policy. You can't keep raising taxes. I mean, the state has run out of money to help us with the film industry. We have 100,000 employees in the city, $5 billion business. And movies are going to start going back to California and back to Toronto and back to Eastern Europe. It'd be a disaster for us, and the city just doesn't have the money to make up for that. We have a small tax credit. The state has to do it. That's about one of the better investments the state can make because it generates more revenue for the city and the state coffers than it costs. But, you know, you rile against big bonuses. We want wealthy people to come to the city and make lots of money and spend it. Our problem is that they're not making it. Or they're not making it here, so our tax base is lower, and we can't pay our municipal employees or help those less fortunate. And the monies they spend, it's in stores. The clerks are getting laid off. It's in restaurants. The dishwashers are getting laid off. It's in, you know, transportation and construction and all that's decorating and all the things that people spend money on. We need to grow the economy, not rip it down. And yes, some people may be overpaid, but nevertheless, If you're afraid, what's happening is people are being cowed not to spend money. Even if they have it and can afford it, it's not fashionable to spend money. That creates the problem that we're trying to fix.
The president has been talking the thing down as well. I mean, and again, it just adds to the fear factor. Mr. Mayor, hang on. We've run a little long here on our half hour. It's 8:35. Let's get to Joe Bartlett. Right back to Mayor Michael Bloomberg in just a moment. All right, we're going to get to your questions in a bit here. 800-321-0710. John Gambling with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Housing is always an issue in New York City. I was reading, in fact, Christine Quinn, when I talked with her earlier this morning, talked about this program that you want to put into effect, and she's on board with this.
We've been doing this, buying things, houses. We've done it. You can do it with co-ops, too, where people default, and then you fix them up, and then resell them, and make sure people get mortgages, but give them mortgages only to people who can really afford them. It's been phenomenally successful. Sean Donovan was the guy that really behind all of that, and we've had 17,000 mortgages, only half a dozen defaults. It's really quite amazing. And Sean has gone off to save the country, as you know. I thought it was Obama's best choice. And we are going to announce in a little while, I'll let you in a little secret, somebody named Rafael Sestero, who used to work for Sean and is going to come back. He's been working for in the nonprofit world. And I think I said to Sean, you got to find me somebody that is better than you. And Sean says, this guy's better.
All right, where do you find the money to buy all these houses?
You don't really take any money because they get the mortgage and we get our money back.
Oh, I see. Okay, so the investment from the city is small, to say
right,
the least.
Exactly.
All right, with the money problems and budgetary problems that you face here, and the state is in the same boat here, I know a lot of people, because I hear it from my listeners on the telephone, are concerned that public employees are not paying the same sort of price, if you will, as the private employees getting fired, this, that, and the other thing. The unions, Christine Quinn, again, because the state of the city was yesterday, I refer to her once again, talking about unions going to have to pay, you know, at least take some of the weight.
Well, you know, the
carry
private
some of the
sector
water.
Long ago has given up on defined benefit plans because nobody can afford them, and they have copay and that sort of thing. And we're trying to find ways to get a fifth tier. We have, you know, we change a tier is there was a pension system, nobody could afford it, so they had another that was tier two, then three, then four. So we've done this before. We need a tier five where you have to work longer before you get your benefits because people are living now, you know, so much longer than when these systems were put in place. It just the city can't afford it. And we've got to find some ways to do it. I saw Diane Savino, who's a state senator, she was in the Staten Island Advance, saying that public employees and their retirement packages for public employees should be negotiated through collective bargaining before it gets to the state legislature. And she's 100% right. Unfortunately, the law is exactly the reverse. We'll talk to her today and get her to read the law. But both the state retirement and Social Security law and the state's civil service law explicitly provide that cities in New York are prohibited, believe it or not, from bargaining positions with their employees. So when everybody writes these editorials, I should be out there demanding it. The law says you can't even do that. Now, we may be able to find a ways to working with the legislature and have labor at the table. I'm not saying you don't have some dialogue, but the state should change the law and let us negotiate. The bottom line is, see, they don't want you to.
Exactly, because they want to keep the control, and it always seems.
Well,
to
at least now she's the chairperson of the state Senate Civil Service and Pensions Committee, so she obviously agrees with us. She said in the Advance, which is the paper on Staten Island, really a record there, where she comes from, that she thinks we should be able to. So hopefully she'll sponsor legislation to do exactly that. In the meantime, we're going to have to work with this legislation. And Harry Nespoli, who runs, there's an overall umbrella organization of municipal unions, and you know, I talked to him periodically, talked to him yesterday. They won't say it, but I think they understand we cannot continue this way. Our pension costs are going to go up by something like $4 or $5 billion over the next 4 years.
I understand that. And again, the law is what the law is, and they're hard to change. But as you say, you've got, four tiers now. You're looking for a fifth tier. Should we not maybe look at what has already been promised, tiers 1, 2, and 3, for modification?
I mean, you can, John, but the state constitution says if they get granted a benefit, even the state can't take it away. So no union is going to give you that. You have no leverage whatsoever. The only leverage you have is... We have in our budget about $700 million budgeted for savings from pension system and health system. If we don't get that, we're going to have to lay off people. I mean, the bottom line is what people are having a hard time getting their hands around is the city business model is we hire people, they provide services, we pay them. So if you want to reduce the amount of money you spend, you just have to have fewer people.
4-day work week.
It's one of the dumber ideas I've ever heard of. We have a city where we have to provide services 24/7, okay?
I mean, we can't all take the day off.
Oh, you don't suggest them they take the day off, they wouldn't get paid for it.
Well, it sort of came to mind.
That may be, but I don't
again,
think...
Again, state law says you can't do that.
You're not going to be able to negotiate that. And what's more, we have to provide services all the time. That doesn't... It's like buyouts. Buyouts are going to give money to those people who were going to retire anyways. It's just not a ways to do things. The bottom line is you're going to have to find... And every agency, and they're going to scream. And you say, well, let's protect the police. Fine. That guy says protect the fire department. Fine. That guy says protect senior programs. By the time you get done, every study you ever do, every poll, cut services, not taxes. Okay. Which services? Oh, well, don't touch seniors. Don't touch education. Don't touch police, fire, sanitation. Then don't touch the mandate you can't by law. You're now down to,
nothing.
We can get the 5-person immigrant affairs agency and close them. It's not going to save us anything. And in fact, that's an agency that with 5 people makes a big difference in this
city. Expansion of the bottle bill to water.
I think that is a great idea. The revenue would be nice, but the real answer is so many people just throw bottles away. And it just trash all over the street. History shows, because they did it with cans for sodas, when you have this deposit, people don't throw them on the streets anymore. I was playing, we're both golfers. One club I played at, they sold teas, little bags of teas, for 10 cents. And I said to the guy, you know, it must cost you more than 10 cents to ring up the cash register. He said, it's amazing. He said, when they have to pay 10 cents for it, they don't leave the T's all over.
They keep
when
them.
They're free, when they're free, they throw them away. They don't even bother to bend down and pick them up. Just people, you and me and everybody else, we're all strange.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we're going to let some of our listeners tee off. Speaking of that, using that metaphor in just a moment, 800-321-0710. We will be right back with your questions. 6 minutes before 9 o'clock, John Gambling with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Time to take the questions from some of our listeners, Mr. Mayor. We're going to start with line number 4, and that is, I got a computer problem. I got to look around the corner. Brad. Brad, you're with the mayor. Go.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
I don't think the budget reality takes into account the amount of illegal aliens that are weighing down our educational and medical costs in the city. And what's going to happen next year when... they're still around.
Brad, the truth of the matter is that if you take a look at the undocumented people here, there's very low crime. They pay taxes because their employers withhold it, and they don't qualify for an income tax credit because you can't even get to them because the numbers, you know, the documentation's wrong. And they tend not to have their children here. They tend to come, leave the children at home, send money back. And they don't go to hospitals until they get very sick, but they tend to be young and not need it. So on balance, economically, the undocumented are a real boon. I happen to think that we should be in charge of who comes in. We should have more immigrants coming here, but they should come through the legal process. But in terms of helping the economy, the undocumented do help. And when jobs slow down, they're the first ones to lose their jobs, and they leave.
Paper this morning says there are fewer people coming here illegally because there are fewer jobs.
Oh, yeah, the number of people who were here have left and have left is very big.
All right, thanks for the telephone call. Let's go to Lou. Lou, you've got the ear of the mayor. Go.
Mr. May, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking the call. I just have a thought. I wanted your opinion on this. For the hard money being put to the cities and the states for infrastructure, roads, bridges, etc., what are your thoughts about the federal government funding those projects rather than giving those monies directly to the state and the cities? And what I mean by that is that the state and the city municipalities would put those projects out for bid. Once those contracts were awarded, then those contracting companies would actually get loans through the banks.
I'm not sure which side you're on. I've always thought that when you let Congress decide where to spend money on infrastructure, and we desperately need it in this country, number one, it's the president's job to have an overall guiding philosophy, and he should enunciate that. And I've talked to him about that, and I think he will. Can't do everything day one. Jefferson built the canals, and the railroads were big in Lincoln's day. And
Eisenhower did the roads.
Eisenhower did the roads, and Roosevelt, a lot of municipal buildings. Federal government and state government and city governments should fund these things. New York City funds, we have a $10.4 billion infrastructure budget this year with city dollars because the state doesn't come through and the federal government doesn't come through. But the trouble is, if the federal government goes and picks projects, you will build bridges to nowheres. We built that bridge in Alaska, remember, Ted Stevens?
Sure, absolutely.
Republican bridge. Yeah, well, the Democrats in control now. They'll build Democratic bridges to nowheres. If you gave municipalities a subsidy, but they still had some skin in the game, they would build things that are important and people will use. Why? Because the local taxpayers can influence local government. And if they start building bridges to nowheres, the local taxpayer is going to say, scream bloody murder, throw them out of office. At the federal level, it's so removed, you can't really do that. So I've always been in favor of moving down to the cities. Now, if you want to help them, you know, guarantee 80% of the debt, then they can go to the municipal market and borrow the money. It doesn't require much federal money. Very few of those projects will default. So you don't waste a lot of this federal money. Local municipalities will put it onto their balance sheet.
All right, and to that point, I like Frank's question here on line 5. Frank, ask the mayor. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's true that Bridge to Nowhere is a great segue to this question. Mayor, that section of the BQE from Bay Ridge all the way to the Battery Tunnel, including the Gowanus, has been under construction my entire adult life, and I'm 50.
You're 50?
Who is running that project?
Tomorrow I'm going to be 67, and it's probably been there for my entire...
That's a great question, Frank. Why does it take 50 years to fix a road?
You know, it's easy to go criticize. Generally, when you look at these things, clearly... Look, there are some things that are done terribly, and you know, all there's all sorts of problems. A contract that goes out of business, or just there was corruption, and you gave it to the wrong person, or it was poorly designed. Generally, and I'll take a look at the Gowanus. The biggest problem is you have to build, redo while people use it. And so you have to do a lot of construction at night and on weekends, which cost you a lot more than during the day. You can only do it one lane at a time. You look at, they'll work on one lane. And
I've watched them do this on the BQE.
Right, and then they come back and they start all over again on the next lane. They come back because you have to keep using the roads. That's what makes it, you know, there's simple answers to some of this, but Frank, you couldn't, I'm sure you're right about the 50 years, and probably right. I'm right about 67.
They said that about the Manhattan Bridge, I think, which was under repair, still seemingly forever.
Well, you know, yeah, it's also, all kidding aside, if you go back and look, it's never as long as we think. It just seems as long as we think.
You're absolutely right. So, Mr. Mayor, I understand that you mentioned it, that tomorrow is your birthday.
It is. February 14th, 1942.
That makes you, let's see, that makes you 67.
67 tomorrow, which is a lot better than not being 67.
Absolutely so. Are you going to have a birthday party?
I suspect, although my girlfriend didn't say it, there'll probably be a cupcake with a candle in it. I don't want anything big.
Have a good week.
Thank you. You too.
See you next